This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, the background. Yo, what's good with everybody? Hope everyone is feeling okay. Appreciate Hayes for the shift, but welcome back to From the Logo podcast. We're here, we're in the building. I'm joined here today by Hayes, and it's your host with the most. My name is Gifted. Hayes, what's good with you, man?
I'm out here living, brother. Out here living, man.
Out here living is definitely a phrase that I'm trying to live by right now. I just got off of work, but we don't make no excuses. We start every show on time for the most part. So we're here to make some noise. I feel like we would be remiss to not start this with the main topic, which for me has to be the LeBron James and JJ Redick collaboration with their podcast that they're working on. I got to say, man, I heard the first bits of it, and it's a very valid podcast. I feel like many people were afraid of how much change could be made with basketball discourse. Hayes, as you know, as a podcaster, basketball discourse is awful. How many times do you get calls on your show telling you the worst types of trades based on narrative and not based on basketball, right?
So much, bro. That's why I say, like, I think ultimately we got to all understand that, like, most basketball fans, most sports fans, this ain't basketball exclusive, but most sports fans, in my opinion, their sports opinion is formed off box scores and whatever they see or read in the national media. They're not in the weeds like we are, bro. And that's something that as a podcaster and as the platform grew, I had to realize, like, okay, let me stop holding the expectation of me and how much I'm a basketball head on other people.
Yeah, it's definitely a learning process. And I feel like I'm very excited for this LeBron James podcast, primarily because, A, you rarely see a player of his caliber do interviews, let alone an entire podcast venture where they're educating you on the game and things of that nature. So for me, I'm just super excited to see what that looks like. So I think some positive changes can be made from it. But for you, I want to get your thoughts, your beat on the impact of this. And what was your reaction hearing that LeBron and JJ would be teaming up?
I mean, like you said, that having somebody currently playing and not retired and not years removed from retiring at that be in podcasting. But then also we got to understand LeBron James is one of the first superstars, right? The transcendent stars that grew up with this, that has this media savvy about himself. He's the first one of kind of the media age that understands that, right? Like, you see AI on podcasts nowadays, we could barely get an interview, a post-game interview with AI at times. So, like, having that, I think, is such an important part to add that voice. And then also, let's be clear, LeBron James is one of the highest basketball IQ players in the history of the game of basketball. So adding the media savvy that he has, the intelligence of what he has, of how the media game works, and his basketball savvy and intelligence, it's amazing, to be quite honest with you, that we're getting that, man.
Yeah, like, I'm sitting here listening to them, and their first episode, I loved how they didn't go too crazy, right? Because a lot of people, based off the clips, were very confused by B.O.B., America's Play, Pick the Picker, like many complex names and whatnot. But overall, I think they were really able to have success and go crazy. So I was happy to see that. But seeing where this goes from here is huge, because most talk shows are built on just going crazy and not really like talking basketball, but more so narratives about, oh, this team won because they wanted it more. They wanted it harder. They had the will to win. Chicago's not a good team because they don't have the will to win and things like that. You know, like just things that aren't, you know, true, not focusing on, hey, they won the game because at the end of the day, their processing of the zone, understanding where to pick the defense apart is why they won. And I feel like with their first debut episode, they wanted to ease people into it with, you know, soft examples of, you know, good IQ. Like, for instance, he referenced Golden State and Boston. I thought that was huge to just say, yeah, Boston had the better team. But as you know, Hayes, having the better team doesn't always guarantee that you're going to win the series. The execution and the application of that talent is what guarantees that.
That and the game plan, right? You can have the a team that's super and uber talented, but I tell you what, a team that can execute the game plan and a coach that can draw up a game plan is going to beat, especially in the playoffs. And you know, that's something that I love to see in this as well. And one thing, I love what you said there. I want to add another phrase to it that we got to stop overusing in sports and making it seem like it means more than what it means. People, you overuse the fact that you got that dog in you. I know a lot of people that got dogs in them that have no skill and they suck. We see it every year in the draft, every single year. So, like, to have, like, LeBron and JJ, two highly intelligent basketball players, talk about the game in the way that they have, I hope that is going to not go over people's heads, because you can really sit down and grow your knowledge of how basketball actually works by just listening to that podcast, man.
100%. And I think the first step in learning more, and this goes beyond basketball, right? The first step of learning more of anything is to want to learn more, is to have the desire to learn more. And for LeBron to like take time away from his busy billionaire life to, you know, want to educate people on basketball with JJ, who has built his brand, you know, since playing off of that, is the perfect pairing to me. I think that really brings up the most knowledge that we can see. I'm curious about how long it goes, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the question, especially with LeBron being, like you said, as busy as he is. He has a lot on his shoulders. You know, even though a lot of the films that come from LeBron James' production company suck, I mean, he has a lot on his plate that he's dealing with. So, you know, I hope, even if it ends up being something that's, you know, that they have spurts where maybe they record a lot for like a month or two and then they kind of die off and things like that, I still think the knowledge that you can gain from that is more than worth it, for sure.
Yeah, but I do want to segue from it. There were a couple of gems. Again, I will be plugged into this as heavily as I can. Also, welcome in to ZZ. We're actually at the tail end of discussing the LeBron James and JJ collaboration. Did you have time to peep some parts of it? And if not, what's your thoughts about them coming together to make a whole podcast about basketball, ZZ?
Only thing that I peeped was the snippets of like the show where he was talking about Steph and AI being like the most influential and all that, which I thought from what I saw in like the 3 minutes that I did watch, it was everything that I thought it was going to be. I was like, this is going to be a podcast where JJ Redick is laying down the blueprint of a basketball court and LeBron's just coaching away. Like everything that I thought that would be like thoughtful or insightful, I think that this is going to be a great thing for basketball discourse. Now, as far as basketball discourse goes with like in terms of like the NBA community, I'm interested to see how many Bron fans or Bron haters are either going to take LeBron's word for anything that he says basketball related when it comes to like, oh, Steph Curry is the most influential player that I've seen with my own eyes. I look in the comment section and it's he ain't saying nothing about Mike. He forgot Mike and Kobe, yada, yada, yada. And I'm just like, yo, here we go. whatever LeBron says is going to be crucified in the comment section or one of the two. So I'm interested to see it.
Yeah, there's no in between with that. Like, that's a big part of why I think we don't see LeBron do things like this, because when you have a podcast, you open yourself up to scrutiny on a week-to-week basis. And especially when you're at that level, he's not done with basketball. He's still in the game playing basketball. So his takes on plays or teams or coverages or all-time influence, like, these things are going to be picked apart routinely. So this will be a thing. There's going to be like segments on shows dissecting what LeBron said and how he said it. Maybe not the impact of what it meant, of what actual basketball was, but instead what LeBron's opinions were about random bullshit. Like, there's going to be people outraged about, oh, he said Steph Curry is the most, he said Allen Iverson is the most, instead of focusing on when he was breaking down his play versus the Clippers in the fourth quarter and how important it is to value possessions in basketball, how the 2-for-1 is a very positive thing to, you know, sure, find good shots, but you shouldn't sacrifice a good possession just for the 2-for-1, and how literally momentum plays off of that, off of your mistakes doing a potential 2-for-1 can ruin or make a game. They don't want to talk about that. They'd rather talk about who LeBron thinks is influential or not.
Right. And that's the crazy part about it all, is to me, is like, this could be a plus for NBA fans who actually want to take the time to learn from arguably the greatest mind of all time, alongside JJ Redick too. Cause like with JJ, like, I like the fact that JJ, since retirement, hasn't backed down to anybody. He will go on first take back and forth with Stephen A. or Shannon Sharp or Mad Dog or whoever. But at the end of the day, he's still a great basketball mind. So even if you hate LeBron or whatever your beef is, like, just take the time to listen to a basketball-minded podcast, like, with an emphasis on basketball-minded. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Emphasis on basketball. And here on From the Logo, what do? We put an emphasis on basketball. So let's segue for the LeBron James pod. I'll be referencing some things from it here or there. I kind of want to go to a team that LeBron had referenced in the podcast. And this was not on the show notes. I just want to get your guys' perspective on this. The Boston Celtics. Right. I feel like we talked about the Nuggets. We talked about the Oklahoma City Thunder, all of these good teams. And obviously, you know, Boston is a very good team. But in the podcast, LeBron specifically focused on execution, right? Valuing a good possession, right? Getting the most out of what you can in your NBA career. And when I look at the Boston Celtics, this is a team that has that trait in question against the elite of the elite. Boston, their net rating now rivals the 2016 Golden State Warriors, and it's very close to the 2017 Golden State Warriors. This is an all-time team in terms of net rating and the margins of victory that they have over the rest of the league. But we all know that when it comes down to it, people question how good of a player Tatum can be. I want to get your guys' takes on if you think the Jason Tatum talks are too elevated or if they're not highlighted enough, because LeBron said something interesting. He referenced that Boston had the better roster, but lost to Golden State because of execution. But then he also said that Tatum gets too much hate considering the fact that he's 25 and he's had the many deep playoff runs in his career. What are your thoughts on that, Hayes?
I mean, I think you got to, whether it's just or not, whether you agree with it or not, it comes with the territory. People call Jordan just a scorer until they got over the hump. And so nobody's out the line of criticism, right? So because of that, is there some truth to it? Yeah, there is some truth to it. Is it as bad as some people make it out to seem with those two? No, there's not. But until you get over that hump and you get that ultimate goal, that's always going to be there. And the Boston Celtics are a damn good team. And I think the reason why you see the criticism of Tatum as strong as what it is because everybody knows they're a good team and everybody knows they're talented. Nobody is disappointed by somebody that they don't think is good to great. When people are disappointed by Tatum, It's in a lot of ways saying we know we believe you have the capability to do it. You just haven't done it yet. And I think that's the way that I personally look at it. I see Jason Tatum's flaws. I understand that. Hell, I'm worried about it every time they play in the playoffs, and I bet on them, right? But I think that still comes with the fact that I know that talent's there. You just got to unleash it. And once you do, if you let Tatum taste an NBA finals, a championship, because he stays in the finals.
Yeah.
I don't think that genie ever goes back in. I think at that point, that's when you'll see that understanding, some of that clarity that we want to see from Jason Tatum that we don't always see.
Yeah. With Tatum, it's interesting because, like, everything that Hayes said was correct. It comes with the territory. Like, when you think about a player like Jason Tatum, this is a guy who, since he was 19 and he was first step foot in the league, he's been on contending teams year in and year out, right? Anytime they've fallen short or gotten beat by the Miami Heat, it was considered underperforming. You know what I'm saying? It was a disappointment. So those things are the reason why I think, or at least I think, that the ammunition that's fired towards Tatum is fueled off of that, because at the end of the day, Tatum is a player that we looked at when he was 19 and said, this guy just dunked on 2018 LeBron James. This guy is out here without Kyrie Irving, who is the best player on the team, or whatever, the franchise player, however you want to call it. Without him and Brown and Al Horford and the crew is going to 7 games in the Eastern Conference Finals. And this guy's averaging 18 a game. And it's like, yo, this, you can see the promise. You see the skill. Last season, he averaged 30 a game, right? This season, he's averaging 27. What is it? 27, 7, and 6 or something like that. So
yeah, something like that.
When you look, 27, let me get it right. 27, 7, and 8. My bad, Tatum and Tatum fans. But when I look at Jason Tatum, I'm like, look, the issues that he has are sometimes identity, because there's moments where looks like the whole package, the complete package. And then there's moments where he looks like he's trying to be Wardell Stephen Curry. And it's like, yo, you can drive to the lane. Clearly, you can go to the rim and you can get either contact or make the shot. You just choose not to in spurts. You just settle for threes a lot. That's my biggest issue with Tatum, is that I look at him and I'm like, dude, a lot of the times you settle. And this season, settling isn't even a bad thing, because you still have Jaylen Brown, you have Kristaps Porzingis and Derek White and all the boys. So you have a team that you can take the luxury of settling on some nights. That's not going to help your MVP case, even though y'all are 10 games ahead of the second seed in the Eastern Conference. You know what I'm saying? But yet you're listed at number 5 on the MVP rankings, right? And a lot of that is, you can look at the media and say, okay, well, maybe they like Luka and Jokic and SGA more. But even the fans are the same way, because, you know, the MVP award back in the day used to go to the best player on the best team. Now we look at the Celtics, who are a team that is literally a tier above everyone else in the league. But Jason Tatum isn't going to be a top 3 MVP candidate this year. Why? Because at the end of the day, Tatum is not doing more for his team than the other guys. So when I look at it and I see people that say, okay, you put Luka on that Celtics team, they'll be fine. I get where they're coming from. I do. Because the way I see it, you take Luka off the Dallas Mavericks, and right now they're in the play-in, but they probably wouldn't even be in the play-in. Maybe.
Yeah.
10 seed, 11 seed type thing. Yeah, you take Tatum off the Celtics, they're still chilling. They're still a playoff team, not a play-in team, a playoff team without him. So that's where the MVP knocks that he gets are warranted and justifiable, because at the end of the day, Luka's more valuable to his team than you are. Even Nikola Jokic, and that team is literally the same team last year, minus Bruce Brown. But you can tell Nikola Jokic and the impact that he has on not just himself in the game, but his teammates, is more warranted than what Jason Tatum provides. So a lot of the time, I think Jason Tatum, like, the hate is not necessary, or sometimes it goes too far. But when we start talking about comparisons and we start talking about, oh, should he be MVP over this guy or this guy? It's like, okay, now we're really starting to having to dissect what Tatum does on a night in, night out basis. And it's not the same as the other guys. It's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like with Jason Tatum, and I said this before, right? I feel like sometimes we forget how old he is. But the level of experience that he's had, you would think that he would be a much better player by this point. And he still has time, right?
Yeah.
I just feel like with Boston, year after year after year, we see them load up their roster with beautiful roster construction to complement their best players. And they go far in the playoffs normally because of that. But the problem is, there's a difference between going far and being outmatched by another team that has less talent, right? The Heat, they don't have much talent in comparison to Boston, but the collective basketball IQ the Heat have with their sets and what they want to get to and what they, you know, try to take advantage of, that is what makes people feel like they could have the edge over Boston. And even Boston has great basketball IQ, but the development of that in comparison to the elite of the elite is the question. For Jason Tatum to be in talks with Shea, with Luka Doncic, with Jokic, with LeBron James, some people question the basketball IQ in terms of how they maximize their rosters. Are you going to get Boston a great look down the stretch, or are you just going to take isolation pull-up threes right off of the dribble with 4 seconds left on the shot clock, right? Even, and by the way, this goes back to some things that Bron highlighted in his podcast too. The fact that, like, you're in a possession and you're playing, right? And you're getting the Curry switch and you're spending so much energy and effort trying to get the switch that there's like 6 seconds left on the clock. At that point, if you don't take advantage of that opportunity because you're trying so hard to get the 2-for-1, you miss a shot, Golden State gets out in transition, Steph Curry 3. Now, this lead that you just had, this 12-point lead, now has boiled down to like 5 or 6. Those are the differences. When you compare Tatum to Jokic, who is the best player in the NBA, the sheer difference beyond every other metric is the decision-making Jokic has. How good of a team Denver is in the clutch when it matters, right? How good they've been in terms of understanding, okay, we have been sleepwalking through this entire game versus the Los Angeles Lakers. But when it's 2 minutes left, Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic up top, inverted screen. Jokic lob pass to Aaron Gordon. You thought it was a hook shot. It was not. It was a pass to Aaron Gordon in the dunker spot. Jokic getting the mismatch because for whatever reason, Rui Hachimura on Jokic is looked at as an actual adjustment. I'm going to take advantage of that. Creating your advantages versus the set defense is the question. And with Boston, they've been such a talented team. They haven't been tested by many teams during the regular season. But in the two matches we've seen versus Denver, what has been the common denominator, y'all? Jason Tatum's play. And it's only two games. I don't want to go too OD with it. But in those two games, you literally saw every reason why. Damn, Boston has the best roster in the NBA, but I still doubt them to really beat a team like Denver. Because in both of those games, Jaylen Brown was the better player. And respectfully, for Jason Tatum, he is their most talented player. So we expect him to be the guy to get them good shots down the stretch and be the difference. And in those games, you can argue if Tatum plays better, maybe they win both of those games. He was the difference. And that is the difference for most basketball teams, is their best player.
It's a fact.
Yeah.
All but, facts.
But since we brought up Denver, I do have to bring up Kyrie's game winner, man. Mm-hmm. I need your reactions. I was sitting down. I was watching the game. Left-handed, going left. Basically, over the shoulder hook shot over Nikola Jokic for the game. Hayes, what was your reaction to the Kyrie madness we saw?
I just screamed. I'm just not even gonna lie to you. That was my reaction. I have no eloquent speech to give you. I was completely floored by the shot, the moment, and honestly, it's probably one of the best game winners we will ever see in our lives, to be 100%.
Yeah. I was in bed playing Fortnite and my phone goes off and it's like, the game is close or whatever. Like Denver's up 3 or something like that. So yeah. I'm like, it was like the NBA app giving me the notification. So I'm like, all right, let me go check this out. So I'm sitting in the bed, right? I'm watching YouTube TV on my phone. The play before that was when Luka caught, they ran the inbounds play and Luka got the ball. He was butt ass naked, knocks down the shot to tie it. Then, we set up Kyrie's play, right? So I'm watching the shit on my phone. Kyrie gets the ball. I'm thinking to myself, okay, what is Kyrie going to – I know Kyrie's going to shoot it. I thought they was going to give it to Luka. But I was like, at this point, Kyrie's taking game winner. Then yeah. I look and see he's got Jokic on him. So I'm like, okay, where is he going to go? bro, rises up with the left on some Magic Johnson, baby Kareem shit. My jaw dropped, right? My girl, she walk in the room and she's like, why are you looking like that? And I looked at her dead in her face. I was like, I just saw greatness. Like, what are you talking about? So I show her the replay and I'm like, you tell me what I just looked at. Cause this shit is crazy. The left hand being guarded by a 6'11".
Tough.
Bro, what are we like? That genuinely is a top three, like most talented game winner I've ever seen. Or one that just genuinely had me like jumping out of my seat. Another one is Bronze from 2018. I think it was game three against the Raptors. The horse shot off the glass.
Oh, like, yeah. The horse shot off the glass. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I ran. I literally got up from, I was in my basement, got up, ran upstairs to tell my parents, like, yo, did you just see that, bro? And I knew the Raptors were going to get swept after that, but whatever. But yeah, that's top three game winner for me in terms of just like, oh my God, how did you do that? You know?
Yeah. That shot was crazy, and I really feel like people don't understand the degree of difficulty. First off, to attempt that shot in a game is crazy, but to literally, with the time going down, because in the post-game interview, they said that their play was basically meant for Luka or Kyrie, and Kyrie was able to free himself up, but off the move, because remember, he caught the ball and dribbled slightly into the three-point line, mm-hmm. and where he wound up taking the hook game winner from was literally a step in the three-point line. That is quite literally a pull-up mid-range in transition that it will count for, but that's off one curling over Nikola Jokic. And I think with Kyrie Irving, we know, you know, obviously how talented and how skilled of a player he is, but seeing shots like that that just defy all logic, it shows you the work he puts in to make tough shots like those. And that's what makes the Kyrie conversations hard to have, because you see moments like these where it's like, wow, that's a crazy Kyrie game winner. He's insane. Is he the most skilled athlete we've ever seen? And then you think about, okay, well, what's his production in the playoffs versus good competition post-2017, right? Like, you ask yourself these questions, but in terms of the dedication to his craft in the game, there's few players you're going to name that work harder than what Kyrie does.
Yeah.
Pretty sure. Yeah. I just don't know that for me, if I would lean on saying Kyrie's the most skilled player ever. I don't know what y'all think. I don't think he is. I think he's in that conversation. Mm-hmm. I think you have to bring up Kobe.
Yeah.
I also think defining what skill is matters a lot in this conversation. Just because you can make a bunch of super flashy game winners, I don't think that's like everything that skill is. I think your footwork, your mental counters to reading a defense, right? The way that you utilize your body in the game on defense and offense, right? Like skill encompasses a lot of things. And I think that the counters that Kyrie has, knowing that he can go left, he can go right, he can shoot off left, he can come off the screens. He's a great off-ball player. He's a great dribbler. Like, you look at all of these things we mentioned, skill. And then when I think of players like Steph, like the ball handling mechanics with the shooting, there's few players that can do what Steph and Kyrie can do off of the bounce. And that's what makes Kyrie so dangerous, because he has that in his bag. But then in terms of the way he finishes, I've seen him many times where he can take the ball up and then easily double clutch or fake left and go right or fake right and go left or make a post hook for the game. So I can get Kyrie being in that conversation, but I want to hear from y'all. Who do y'all think the most skilled player is if you have to pick somebody?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, you go ahead.
That's a difficult question, like, especially unprepared. Like, I have to go through a lot of tape before I feel comfortable answering that. Kyrie's up there, right? But man, that's a difficult one. I'm gonna still go Kobe, but Kyrie's up there.
See, for me, like Gifted said, when you start defining what we mean by skill, that's where things get tricky. Because to me, I've always asked this question when people talk about it. I'm like, when y'all talk about skill, are you just talking about offense? Or are you talking about both sides of the ball?
Like, right. Yeah.
That's something where when you factor in, like if I say Kobe Bryant is the most skilled player, which I think he probably is, would be mine at least. When I factor that in, I'm thinking Kobe is one of, if Kobe is the toughest shot maker I've ever watched with my eyes. And I say that meaning it could be two defenders on him. It could be someone draped over him twice in the same game, like Ruben Pattinson. And he's just, I mean, he can just hit some of the most incredible shots. Another player that will end up in this discussion when it's all said and done is Luka Doncic, because I can apply that same logic to him. I've seen Luka hit some crazy. Shit. I mean, I've seen him hit one-hand shots from the floater fading away. Like, just things that I'm like, yo, you are toying with these boys right now, right? So for Kyrie, he's in that conversation for sure. I'd say Kobe's in that conversation. Jordan's in that conversation. Hakeem is in that conversation. KD would be in that conversation. And shit, at one point, I guarantee you Wembanyama will be in this conversation.
Wemby's definitely going to be in that conversation for sure.
Yeah, I'm just – and when you start factoring in, like, the definition of skill, that's where things can get tricky. For me, I think Kobe – I look at him and I'm saying, okay, Frobie Kobe, number eight. You know what I'm saying? Young Kobe.
Woo!
That guy was a lock on the defensive end. The elite of two-way players, right? Mm-hmm. Probably the best two-way player at that time, back when he was winning championships with Shaq and shit. So then you factor in the fact that once he got older and his footwork improved even more because it had to, the athleticism slipped a little bit. But, dude, like, Kobe was still hitting some miraculous shit even when he was number 24 in ball. Like, he was still doing incredible things as a basketball player on both sides of the ball, where you're just like, yo, it's one of those things you just have to factor in. So, yeah, it's a lot of people that you could throw in there. A lot of people.
Yeah. .com, I like this comment. Playmaking matter in terms of skills. See, how I view it, and again, I feel like many people are going to view it differently. I feel like when I say most skilled player, I'm thinking of one of two things. It's either your skill overall on offense, defense, period, or the level of gap that you have at what you do best. Like, if you're the best mid-range shooter ever, what's the gap on that? Who's the closest one to you, right? Or your dominance in a specific trait of the game in basketball, right? Most people say that Magic Johnson is the most, like, skilled, best passer ever, especially at his size, right? Like, what's his dominance in comparison to other passers, right? I think the reason why Steph gets in this conversation is because of the level of dominance he is as a shooter, that people just get so numb to him making 30 footers off the bounce. Like, that's a regular shot for him. Like, he's shooting like 12 to 13 threes a game, 10 for his career. And the level of efficiency at it puts him miles ahead of every other three-point shooter you can think of. Like, there's not many other traits in basketball where you're saying, oh, wow, that player is by far and away the best ever to do it, and it's not really a conversation.
Yeah.
Things like that is what I look at in terms of skill, right? Even Hakeem with his footwork, I think he probably has the best footwork ever, right? Like, the skill and the gap of those things is what I look at.
I mean, and when you talk about Hakeem, like, I feel you on that, because when you think about how many players, I know y'all said y'all done with the 90s, but how many players, how many of y'all favorite players from the 2010s and 2020s had to go to Hakeem for some footwork lessons? Let's talk about it.
But I mean, shoot, Giannis went, and I haven't seen
LeBron, Giannis, Dwight Howard, all of them. Oh, my God. I need to go back to the 90s, but whatever. So I like how you mentioned Steph, too, because I think I forgot to say him. But Steph, for sure, would be in that conversation. And I think everything about his offensive game would put him in, bro. Like, I think about not just the three-point shooting, but the way in which he can get other guys open. The fact that nobody talks about how Steph might be the most underrated rebounding point guard in the league. I'm not joking. This man has been getting boards. In 2018, he out-rebounded Tristan Thompson in the finals. So, and that was the
– Tristan was also a little bit caught off guard by yet another child support claim. He wasn't –
Yeah, either it was a child support claim or another –
I forgot about that.
Or maybe both. It was probably both.
Probably man both. Was going through it off the court, man. Yeah.
Man was not worried about no ring. He was worried about them court papers. But yeah, so I'll put Steph in that list for sure, too.
For sure. For sure. I think what, to answer the question that was asked, that to go back to it, is playmaking part of skill? Yes, playmaking is a skill, and it's a skill that I think when we see it and it looks flawless, some people take it for granted, but playmaking definitely is involved in skill for sure.
Yeah.
I feel like people don't understand what playmaking fully is. Like, I hate these conversations where people say, oh, how could this guy, how could he be the better playmaker? He averaged less assists. Playmaking it's isn't assists.
Oh my God, that goes back to like when people try to make the conversation where people get steals and it makes them a good defender. That's not how
I hate
it works.
That shit.
Yeah, playmaking literally means that you see the play before it develops and you make a decision before the play gets there, and you just it's a whole level of processing that's done to get into playmaking. It's absolutely a skill. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like if you were to say X player is the best passer, then we know we're talking about passing. Playmaking is a whole mix of things, right? Especially on the offensive end. Same thing with defense. If you were to say, okay, he's the best stealer in the league because he leads the league in steals. All right, not really tripping off that. But if you were to say he's the best defender, no, bro, come on now. There's so many. If you want to factor in blocks or
levels,
get deep, it's just levels to this shit. So, yeah, I feel you on that, Hayes.
Nah, Hayes, I got to tell you, I 100% agree because people have to understand, like, playmaking is where like you're impacting the game so much with your presence that you're making quality looks exist because of your presence, right? A prime example, right? Like the way that Shaq was so dominant in the paint, even though he wasn't like this 9-assist guy, but because Shaq was so dominant, you had to send extra bodies. And Shaq was a very underrated passer.
Yes,
and he made players better because it's like, bro, they're leaving me because we know Shaq is an automatic 2 points in the paint, right? Yeah. Shaq is a classic example of gravity and how you bend the court. Yep. Obviously, Steph, right? Like how he's such a threat off the ball, you wind up playing 4-on-5 basketball. So now Draymond can make the passes to other cutters because it's like, two bodies are on Steph. Now the rest of the floor is wide open. Yeah. Another player who's a great example that I think gets severely underrated and shouldn't be, James Harden. I feel like people fall in love with how many points he averaged or how many times he got to the free throw line or how he has a fat suit that no longer becomes a fat suit and it's weird. But if you look at James Harden's game, he's absolutely one of the best playmakers ever because he was such a threatening scorer. When he brings the ball up and literally dictates every single possession for the team, he had teams guarding him like this because they don't want to foul. And when you do that, you're generating wide open rim finishes. How many times do we see James Harden in his prime in Houston do the Euro step that's really a lob, but you thought it was a floater? He's a master at these things. So playmaking to me is more than just I have 12 assists, but it's how you're breaking down a defense to create quality looks. I'll give you another example, which y'all might disagree with. I don't give a damn. Rudy Gobert, right? Work with me here. Obviously, right? Not a great passer, right? Mm. I hear that. But the screens he would set in Utah to create separation for their three-point shooters was a big part of their offense. That is also playmaking. But see that right there? Like, that's something that's off the wall because it's not even involving Rudy as the passer, but it's the advantage that he created with his screens. These are all examples of playmaking.
It's also the angles he took on screens. And that's something that's very high level that you got to actually be watching and paying attention to. Rudy Gobert took certain angles on screens to where it made it to where it don't matter the length of the defender, anything. You're not getting over the screen. It does not matter. You're stopping there. And so even in how he operated in space, then coming off the screen, because if you don't move after setting that screen in the proper way, the defender, if they're quick enough, can still come off there and help kind of edge a little bit. With the way that Rudy Gobert moved and operated in that space, if you would have left him, it would have been a lob over the head. So it's a lot of intricacies that go into playmaking that's not just passing. Yes, passing is part of playmaking, absolutely. But you can, there's so many plays that are made on every single possession that we don't ever talk about, and few and even less people notice because that's just not what they're watching. They're watching what the ball handler's doing, and that's just a level of of breaking down basketball that I love that we do here only on From the Logo. Y'all make sure
only
you
on From the Logo. Talk to me.
It's the detail, man. It's the detail to the game. And it's just like Hayes said, right? Like how steals doesn't define if you're some crazy defender. What a lot of people underrate about defense a lot to me is rebounding, right? Because as good as your defense can be, right? As good as you can be on ball, if you don't get the rebound to close the possession, what are we doing, guys? We're opening another offensive possession. So now it's you're not getting the stop. A part of getting the stop, yes, you want to make them miss. But if you cannot get the board, you open another opportunity for someone to score. Or, for instance, if you're not on ball, the off-ball defense, right? Knowing that, okay, this guy is baiting me. He's wanting me to help off of my corner, so I give up a wide-open three. Or, shoot, I was ball-watching so hard that my guy cut back door. These are the defensive things that never get talked about. And more times than not, for me at least, these are the first things I look at to determine how good of a defender someone is. You averaging 3 to 4 steals is impressive, but that's not the end all be all to finding out who's really good on defense or not.
Chad, I just want to take the time since
go ahead.
No one else is doing it. Do y'all realize how much great basketball content you're getting right now From the Logo? Like, let's just take a moment. Let's take a moment to pat ourselves on the back. Because let me tell you something. I'd have been on a whole lot of podcasts in the last 4 years. This is the one that I can genuinely say I have never dove as – we're talking about how underrated defensive rebounding is. I am in heaven right now. This is great. This is great. W From the Logo, W host.
How does this impact LeBron's legacy, though?
That's a good question.
Here we go. What does this impact the GOAT conversation? Because clearly, you are
exactly this,
man. But hey, guys, I got to cut out, man. I appreciate you guys so much, man. Yes, got to take care of the family. I'll be back. We'll see you guys on Thursday.
Yes, sir. Yes,
absolutely.
Sir.
Hey, absolutely. Hey, no problem, bro. Peace. Yeah. Hey, man, big shout out to Hayes and all that. ZZ, I think this is the perfect time to transition to the next topic here, which is the 65 games. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that people aren't hip to yet. They will be. The biggest shift in all NBA and pretty much every accolade this year for the NBA is the 65 games limit. Yeah. I think beforehand, we would say internally, okay, if it's in like the 60-ish range, that's good enough. If you were like below 55 games, it's like, all right, you're probably not going to win anything. But now they have a concrete limit. If you do not play 65 games, at the very least, you're not going to make it. And the detail that people don't know, too, is you have to play at least 20 minutes in a game for it to qualify as a game. That's one reason why this season Jamal Murray is not going to be eligible for Supermax, because he got injured in some games and didn't play above 20 minutes because of his, overall minutes limit. So for you, ZZ, what I want to ask you is, do you think 65 is a good benchmark for stars in the NBA? Should 65 games be the imposed limit, or should they have just left it alone as they always have? What do you think?
Honestly, I think, because here's the thing. I understand why they put the 65 limit in. It was because, essentially, you look back in the last even 10 years, there would be instances where, because here's why I'm looking at this as a fan. I've heard fans say, right, on the internet, whatever, I paid this X amount of money and flew all the way from over here to come see my favorite player, and he's not playing, right? And it's not because he has a torn Achilles or a torn MCL or anything torn. He just is resting, right? So I just wasted my money on this product, and I didn't even get to see what I wanted. So honestly, shout out to Mars. What up, Mars? Shout out, Mars. So honestly, I'm looking at that, and I'm like, dude, okay, you have to factor in the fact that you play for fans, right? The fans are here to see you play. And if I am a paying customer and I paid to see, Kawhi Leonard, let's throw him out there. If I'm a San Antonio Spur and I came to see Kawhi Leonard on national television, and I find out that Pop and Kawhi and the doctors are just like, not tonight. The hell am I doing? I feel like I'm being bamboozled. You know what I'm saying? And I understand the player side of it as well, because when you look at like Tyrese Haliburton, a player like him, who actively has been talking about how much he doesn't like the 65-game rule, but he understands it, at the end of the day. So I can't be as mad as Tyrese Halliburton because I'm like, at least you get why this rule is in place. Look, I look back at, you know, NBA history, Michael Jordan played 15 years, right? Some breaks in between, but whatever. 9 times, 82 games.
All crazy.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. When we're talking about, when, as for as much as we talk about how the greatness of LeBron James's longevity, can we also talk about and highlight the durability of a Michael Jordan? Because 82 games back then wasn't shit. 82 games now in 2024 with the advancement in technology and medicine and all of that is a problem for players. They feel like they're the victims here. I'm like, bro, you get paid to play basketball. I don't give a damn about none of that other stuff. Damian Lillard, he said, you know, I went through a divorce this year. You know, DeAndre Ayton was like, people don't understand, bro. I was sleeping on an air mattress. I don't give a damn what you.
That was crazy, by the way.
He really thought we was going to have some sympathy. Bro, you get paid to play basketball, right? You get paid to do the things that we, the fans, do in our spare time, right? And most of us have to pay money for these memberships or whatever to go play basketball. Y'all get paid to play basketball. You have not the easiest job in the world because you have to keep your body in shape and all that, but you are living out your dream and getting paid for it. So there is no reason why guys like Mike, guys like Kobe, guys like Stockton, guys like Tim Duncan, like the older generation that the fans are so desperately trying to get away from, those guys could do it easily, time after time after time, because it was just, that's just what it was. I think back to another thing too. I'm going to give Jason Tatum some love because Tatum essentially said the same thing that the past greats have said. I'm out here to play, and I know somebody is watching me for the first time. So he has the same mentality that Kobe had, that he inherited from Michael, and the list, and the yada, yada, yada. Those are the players where you're like, okay, these guys aren't just living out their dream and getting paid for it. They actually care about the fact that they are influencing a 9-year-old that is a big Tatum fan, right? Like, those are the ones that I'm like, they understand it. They get the rule. The rule should have been in place. Shit. Honestly, what would you say the peak of load management was? Well, and I mean, just like, not after it got started, but when it was just like getting out of hand.
I think when the Spurs sat out like 8 or 9 rotation players when they were trying to make a big playoff run, and they sat like a lot of players on their team, like a absurd amount. And Popovich was just outright saying, yeah, I'm doing this because they're tired. And he was okay with the fine and whatnot. I think that's probably like the peak of it. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard, you got to bring up in terms of, you know, him. But I just find it weird because to me, well, okay, first off, the reason why 65 exists, period, is they're in a negotiation war with these TV agencies. So, like, they're trying to get more confirmation that star players are going to play. Right. So by emphasizing this rule to where it's like, hey, you might be missing out of $40 million if you don't play, like, 5 to 6 more games in the season. So play. And that's what's happening. I kind of don't like it from the sense that, are you going to really tell me that if Giannis plays 64 games and he's averaging 33-12-8, he's not an all NBA player because he missed one game? I think that's kind of dumb, but I feel like they had to start somewhere, and that's the purpose of what the 65 games is meant to be. It's also kind of weird because when you compare the league now compared to what it was, I think the pace of play in today's game is drastically different. I think that the travel with what these players have to do now is also kind of different. But more than anything, the skill level that players have now and the requirements and the pace of, like, how they're going up and down the floor, the three-point shot, like, there's so many factors that just make it so different from that other era. But on top of it, I think the culture of basketball is changing because the AAU stuff, where all these young kids are putting so much stress on their body, playing 3 to 4 games a day. In one day, they're playing 3 to 4 games for many years, and then college, and then into the pros, right? Even with Zion, how he came into the league with a broken body in some ways, right? Yeah. Lonzo Ball, another guy that has been out for some time with lower leg issues, who's playing crazy AAU. Like, I think all of these things factor into why some of these players come into the NBA not able to go 100%. And my thing is, there's times where, okay, yeah, you could say that you want players to play more, but it also exists to where, hey, maybe if they were just healthy in a vacuum, they could. Because of the 65 game stuff, you got Tyrese Haliburton, who to me, clearly, since the injury, has not been himself, has not been 100%. He's out there playing because it's the difference between him potentially making another extra $40 million or not. So you're going to play. But at the same time, you're putting yourself at risk. You're not playing well. And more than anything, you can make your injury worse, but you feel pressure to play on it now because it is 65. So that's what I don't like about it.
But at the same time, though, like, I agree with you on that point, too. At the same, because I like, I think I like when Stephen A. said it on First Take. He was like, it's not all the players. Like, he's not saying it's all the players that have this rest issue and yada, yada, yada. It's some of them. And when you look at the ones that took advantage of, you know, resting or load management, that's why we're here. So I don't think that the 65 game, you know, rule is going to be in place forever. I think that they eventually will end up changing it to something more suitable and or simply just changing the requirements for certain awards. Like, if you look at MVP, for example, because say you played 50 games and, you know, your team is doing well or whatever, and you start factoring in all of the awards that you could win. I'm not going to let a player that played 58 games, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable with him winning the MVP award over a player that played 65 plus, right? Those are the things that are going to factor in more. So if they wanted to just change the game rule, in a sense, for certain awards, I wouldn't even be like, I feel like that might be where they're going to head, because the 65 game rule, because it covers so many awards and it can impact not only just awards, but contracts, that's going to be something that the NBA is probably going to look to be like, okay, maybe we can find a way to tweak this so that it seems a little bit more fair. Because honestly, when they initially put down the 65 game rule, I thought to myself, okay, they're really trying to punish the players. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just felt like just a slap on the wrist, but like a hit. Like, you better get shit together. So I think that they're going to be more lenient on that in the coming seasons, but I can't also sit here and act like it wasn't warranted. Like, it just wasn't, you know, coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was eventually. No,
for sure. You need to get like some type of answer in there. So again, I understand the constitution of it. I just feel like the execution of it might change based off the precedent that they get. Obviously, we got to see how that goes. I think the more interesting part to go with the 65 games too, though, is the way these players are perceived. Like, I think the face of the load management stuff for a lot of casual people is really Kawhi Leonard, because he missed a lot of time, a lot of games. He would have times where he just straight up wasn't available. But what I don't understand is, like, we then look at players like Kawhi Leonard, even sometimes Anthony Davis, and then we like slander them or we criticize them for not playing. But what frustrates me about it is these guys have genuine injuries. Kawhi Leonard has a degenerative knee that is going to forever plague him for the rest of his career. And in the playoffs, when most people like said that he was this guy that didn't want to play basketball, he played basketball at a high level for two games against the Phoenix Suns and literally tore something because he was playing. So it's like, I find it kind of hard. And like, I get that people just want to make sure that these players play. But at the end of the day, if you're injured, you're injured. And really, it's not a win-win case for any player, because if they don't play, what happens easy, right? If they don't play, you're weak, you're soft. They did this. You're not playing, you're soft. You should retire, right? But then if you do play, why would you play? You're hurt. I can't believe you did that. That was dumb. Like, so like, I really think that's dumb to me.
You want to know, that just made me think of 2021 first round, Lakers and Suns. AD's hurt, but he gets pressure. Like, I remember distinctively the media being like, oh, he should play through it. He should play through it. The Mad Dog and shit. The greats would have played through it. Wilt Chamberlain played on a broken foot. Michael Jordan played on a broken foot. Yada, yada, yada. AD gets pressured to play, gets hurt by halftime. And it's like, Kevin Durant, Toronto Raptors, 2019.
He played.
He wasn't supposed to play. He goes out there, gets hurt in like 15 minutes, and then his injury is worse than it was when he had just strained it, right? So it's like, those moments where the media and fans can pressure players who are legitimately hurt into playing are different than Ben Simmons when he's just trying to get out of Philadelphia and so he's sitting, or Anthony Davis when he was trying to go to New Orleans and he sat, or James Harden when he was trying to get out of Houston and he sat and didn't show up for training camp. Those things are like, okay, now we're looking at you and we're like, all right, bro, what are you doing? You're not even hurt. You're just trying to get out of something. You're trying to get away. You're trying to leave. So those are different than the moments where a player is legitimately hurt, like a Joel Embiid, prime example. How many times has Joel Embiid in the last 4 years played in the playoffs through an injury?
He's had many times where he's got hurt during the first round. He comes into the second round, has some great games, but then loses it as the series overall progresses. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Like, that is a prime example of what you're saying. But that's why I think it's stupid, because how can you, in one breath, put pressure on players to play knowing they're hurt, and then when they play, call them stupid for playing? Like, you can't have it both ways. I really think that's just super reductive to me. I think it's just fair to acknowledge, hey, certain players have different types of bodies, but they want to play. People call Anthony Davis soft all the time. We literally saw him this season play in the one game where they beat us, right? And literally Anthony Davis is playing through injury. Shouldn't be out there, but he's playing because he wants his team to win. I think it varies on a case-by-case basis. But trying to act like these players aren't actually hurt and they just don't want to play, to me, is just so far into like this narrative shit that's got nothing to do with the game or how these players are handling it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it should shift on a case-by-case basis. Everyone's body isn't built the same in the NBA.
Yeah. Brandon said Scottie Pippen was hurt in the 98 finals. He played through his back issues and won a title. If that was Michael Jordan that was hurt, they wouldn't have won the title. let me just say that. Pippen was a decoy and literally played the best game you could play as a decoy, where you're not
– Yeah.
That your deficiencies are on the floor, and the fact that you're so vulnerable and weak, and you know that you got Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman doing anything. More importantly, you got Michael Jordan, so you're gonna win the championship. Like that, no, that's a terrible point. But anyway, yeah, I see what.
Yeah, I don't even get that point too. Like, okay, sure. Like, he played through injuries and they won. Are we saying that should be the standard? You should play when you're hurt. Like, I don't think that's. Yeah. Should be the standard for anybody. I just feel like you should evaluate them if they're good to go, because then if they're not good to go, we're now having to view their performance through a lens of, okay, he's not all the way good. Kobe right. played through many injuries. Kobe is not the standard. Kobe is Kobe, yeah. right? Like, that's why he's Kobe, because what he was doing is not the standard for what other players should be held to, but he chose to go about it this way and he looked iconic doing it, but that should not be the rule. I think that's the difference in these, you know, conversations.
That's another thing too. Like, I like the fact that you just brought up Kobe. Kobe, when you start throwing that out there, it's like, yeah, Kobe was a standard in and of itself. Kobe could have took the same route that a lot of the players from nowadays, the super, super talented players from nowadays, will take and just be like, ah, nah, screw it. I'm not going to play. But Kobe wanted to win. So at all costs. You know what I'm saying? Through a sprained finger, through a strained MCL, whatever you want to call it, Kobe would play through it. And what is he had moments where he looked bad, but he had moments where he was iconic. So there he found a good, healthy balance. The point of the matter is that he was wired differently than these other players, where it's like, I got a responsibility, not just my team, my legacy, coach, fans, family, whatever. I'm going to go do it. You know what I'm saying? So you can't just say Kobe and then just everybody's supposed to be like mom, but no, bro. He was mom before a reason. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
He played on his broken foot. You know what I'm saying? And what was it? 87, whatever. Like, these are different cats. These are just completely different cats. LeBron's played through injury a billion times, right? Different cats.
Listen, LeBron is like all time level different to be playing this long and not have like a significant season ending injury. We see that often.
Yeah,
that's tough. That's very tough for LeBron. So, I mean, yeah, But these are the combos we're having, because these impact what the 65 means moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. These impact maybe the care that these players are going to, you know, especially try to apply on their bodies. Because obviously, when you put money incentives on this stuff, now the care level has to go up if you want to reach those. So I think from that perspective, it can be a positive thing. I just don't feel like it should be like, oh, damn, I feel like I have to break my knee just to make money and play. Like, you never want to see that. So I think there's a good, happy balance with that and whatnot.
I also will say this, too, because all this talk about this is making me think, like, to the All-Star game for some reason. Because when I think about this season, right, like, when I think about this season, the players have complained about the 65-game rule, right? We, the fans, have complained about the All-Star game, right? And like you just said, if you put a little bit of money on something, see how big everybody's eyes get, right? The in-season tournament. In the first two weeks of the in-season tournament, you couldn't distinguish an in-season tournament game from a regular season game. But then 2 weeks later, when they're starting to get closer and closer to the money, now this is an in-season tournament game. The All-Star game is one of those things where I think about how players look at it nowadays, and they're like, it's an exhibition game, whatever, yada, yada, yada. But I'm like, yo, if y'all just gave a little bit more effort, same thing with this low management shit. If y'all gave a little bit more effort to these nationally televised games and to your fans, either fans of just you or the fans of your team, we wouldn't even be having these problems, bro. Like, at the end of the day, it's all about effort in certain spurts. And I get it. When the 65-game suspension, 65-game thing came out originally, they were like, oh, well, the players don't even care about the regular season. This should make the regular season a little bit more interesting, give them a little bit more motivation. You know what I'm saying? But it could be good and a bad thing. As the years go on, they are going to build off of this, right? With how success, that's how Adam Silver works, W commish. But in the next few seasons, they're literally just going to build off of this, and then we're probably going to see it either decrease a little bit or maybe increase a little bit or maybe flip between awards for the required game minimum. But this is okay. I feel like this is just a stepping stone for us. It's just the laying the foundation. You feel me?
Okay. So then now that I have your take on 65 games, we got to address the other big change to the CBA and the other big change really to the NBA in general. Are you a fan of every accolade being positionless now, where now there's not a two-guard requirement? There's not a two-forward. Like, now it's anybody can be anything. What are your thoughts on that, ZZ?
I've talked about this before. Like, a part of me looks at it and I'm like, okay, this is great. The fact that the league is this talented to a point where we're looking at positionless basketball, but it's all across the board for certain players. Because I remember like a couple years ago, I got pissed off one time I think it was like Kyrie. I was like, Kyrie's a point guard. Somebody was like, he's a shooting guard. I got pissed because I was like, well, he was a point guard in Cleveland. What happened? James Harden, I was like, he was a shooting guard. We're talking about him as a top four shooting guard all time, but now he's a point guard. But now I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, there's pros to this. You know what I'm saying? Like, You take a player, if you can transition into another position, that's just a W for me, like in my book. So when we start talking about the All-NBAs and stuff, it can get a little bit tricky because we're so used to a traditional, you know, guard, forward, you know, whatever. But now it's like, okay, if you're talking about like the All-NBA first team list could literally be like a representation of somewhat of a consensus top five, right, in the league. In terms of these players, they're not limited to just being a center, a power forward, a small forward to fill a spot. Now we can throw in like an All-NBA five of Luka, Tatum, Jokic, SG. Like, we can throw all of the top five MVP candidates in the All-NBA first team, and it would logically make sense now. No positions required or anything like that. Now I'm looking at the All-NBA list a little bit differently because I'm like, okay, this right here is telling me a little bit. It's not telling me, oh, this is the best center, this is the best power forward. This is telling me these are the top five players in the league. And if cats don't get off my nuts, good Lord, I might kick them because I have the power to do that.
But anyway, oh, this is hilarious. Brandon be doing that a lot. I just ignore him.
Yeah, that's my point. Brandon just talks. He's new to the hood.
He's a yapper. It's cool. You know.
Yap. Brandon yaps. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, what you think about it?
Okay, so I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't know what to think because my gut reaction was this is soft. And I say that because for multiple years, right, like we've had players where, okay, you have Embiid and Jokic, right? In the past, it's who played better? Who is the better center? Is it Jokic? Is it Joel Embiid? Who's making first team? It has to be one or the other. The same thing back when it was – Wilt Chamberlain versus his competition, Bill Russell, Colt, you know, like all of these star players back in the day, right?
Right.
But at the same time, how dumb is it to say that Jokic and Joel Embiid aren't both first team caliber players when they're both in the MVP race against each other? So I'm like, okay, like I can see the logic for that. But I feel like now what this opens up could be either a healthier way to assess these players in season or a worse way where people are just severely overlooked because now it's not limited. Because the one cool thing is that knowing that it was two guards, two forwards, and a five, it was stamped like, okay, who are my best guards?
Right
here. Okay, cool. Who are my best forwards? Okay, here. Who are my best center position guys? Okay, here. And it was good because at least every position got love in some type of way. If it's positionless, you could dead ass have five bigs on the first team, right?
Yeah.
Giannis, Jokic, Embiid, maybe Anthony Davis one season, right? Like, these are things we could be seeing. But now that this is gone, we're in a situation now where you can legitimately see players not make it simply because they're just getting out-talented. Like, I think Sabonis is such an interesting player to bring up because in terms of regular season, which a lot of people have to remember, All-NBA is not a reputation award, at least it shouldn't be, but it's a regular season accolade. It's based on the production that you put up in the regular season, your impact on winning for your team, and how you dominated your competition. And for Sabonis, it's like, okay, you could argue he's should be All-NBA over Anthony Davis, but Anthony Davis is the better player.
Right.
I think he's a better player than Sabonis. I think I would take him in the playoffs over Sabonis. But in terms of what Sabonis has produced for the season, I fail to see why he's not All-NBA. Even if we understand that some of that production might be shallow versus elite defenses in the playoffs, which you can say all day long, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the other issue, right, is now Rudy Gobert might not get any love. And to me, it's like Rudy Gobert is the reason why the Wolves are where they are defensively. He's right. The reason why they're like the number one seed, because the defensive floor raising that he's done this season with the pieces around him that have supported him have elevated this team to be the number one seed. But because it's only 15 spots, now it's like, well, yeah, but is he better than LeBron? No, he's not better than all these other players who are more dynamic offensively. So it becomes a lot harder to gauge. So
yeah.
I like it and I hate it. It's weird. Yeah.
It's I see where you're coming from with that, but I think that the biggest point that you hit was understanding that this is a regular season award. And
yes.
That's something that I think fans have a tendency to forget about most awards, even with the MVP. The MVP, something as simple as the MVP award that has always been a regular season award. I heard countless people say to me last season that Joel Embiid shouldn't get MVP off of what happened in the postseason the previous year. And I'm like, okay, so this award that you can only win in the regular season, for the regular season, and he's out there leading the league in scoring in back-to-back years, right? Now we just kick all that shit out the window because of what he did in last May or last April. Like, no, bro, it's a regular season award. So I think that this can only help. This is a comment right here that I want to pull up. At least we won't have to see guys.
I can give you that. I can definitely give you that. Yeah.
That was essentially what I was about to get to, was like perfect. That was just the perfect comment right there. We now have that, and we can, like you said, be able to gauge the regular season as a whole. You know what I'm saying? For the players that get put in the All-NBA first team selection. So another thing too is Joel Embiid, think about this.
Mm-hmm.
The one reason why Joel Embiid wasn't making consistent All-NBA first teams, the one reason was because of Nikola Jokic.
Who he was competing against for MVP.
He was competing against. So Joel was just stacking up second teams, right? No matter if he was averaging more points or more rebounds or better defender or whatever, didn't matter, right? Now he has an opportunity where that isn't really going to fall into play. Of course, he's going to have to play the required amount of games or whatever, which that happens. But now that big obstacle or hurdle is not in place for a player like a Joel Embiid, right?
No.
I can look at it and be like, all right, some other players might have a shot here to get some shine.
And see, that's something that I can wholeheartedly like, but I feel like the criteria for a lot of these awards are still not going to be as clearly defined. Right. I also said that like 65 games, I'm telling you, Jokic is going to be a lock MVP finish every single year because he's going to play 70 games. His role, it doesn't really take a crazy amount of athleticism. A lot of it is touch and skill. He could play this way for a very long time and be just fine. He doesn't sustain any significant injuries. So again, that's Jokic's claim. I think with players like Donovan Mitchell, right? Like okay, he's a great player. He's not going to make it this season because of games played. But I think when you take it out and it's just all positionless, you're going to see players get snubbed. Like Bam might not make all NBA. And right. I still feel like he's one of the best bigs in the NBA. He's still one of the best defenders in the NBA. But now that it's no positions, it's all, well, shoot, are you saying Bam should make it over Brunson? Are you saying, right, like it makes the conversation overall harder, which can be either good because now we have to really break down the game and see who deserves it, or worse, because now it's like, well, it's too many options. I'm going to just go with this one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel you on that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like with all of these things in mind, I think this is the perfect time to take a look into the Western Conference and Eastern Conference playoff races right now. Obviously, we are getting closer and closer to the end of the season. Pretty soon at the end of the season, we will be constructing our own all-NBA and all-defensive teams for Frontal Logos, so make sure to tap in for that. We want to wait until the season is concluded so we have our full list, because these things are rapidly changing. Like, game's not over yet, so we still have a whole lot of time left. But, ZZ, I want to ask you a couple of questions with the play-in conversation right now. In the Western Conference, and we see it change literally from a night-to-night basis.
Literally. We saw
Kyrie Irving hit a crazy game winner. Last night, Golden State lost to the New York Knicks. Very, very tough loss. It's Jalen Brunson once not Brunson, my bad. Josh Hart literally played the entire game. Yeah, that was the thing. We're also seeing the Suns kind of slide where they lost to a Bucks team without Giannis. What do you think the play-in is going to conclude as in the Western Conference with the Suns and Dallas? And also, what would be your ideal play-in matchups? What's the best one-on-one matchup you could think of?
See, it's tricky because, like you said, it changes every day. And there are teams that have good weeks and there are teams that have bad weeks. But it's so just up and down. It's hard for me to really decide. But the way I look at it right now, like if the play-in started today, it'd be what the Lakers and the Warriors matching up, right? 9 and 10 seed, right?
Right now, yep. Mm-hmm.
And then because to be completely honest with you, like the fan in me, not the Warrior fan in me, but the NBA fan in me, with the possibility of a play-in matchup of Lakers, Warriors, Suns, Mavericks, like that's
crazy.
That's gonna crazy. Feed families, yeah. Right? Like it's gonna feed families. But when I look at the teams and I'm thinking about, you know, obviously the strength of schedule for the games that's left, the Warriors have the third easiest schedule. You know, they take a tough loss to a Knicks team last night, but with this Warriors team, we've seen them when they are just rolling. And another thing I want to say too, the Warriors, defensively, oh my God. There are moments where I look at this team and I'm like, yo, like even last night in the Knicks game, there was back-to-back possessions where they had the Knicks legitimately stomped. They were either getting the passing lanes or blocking shots or, like you said, getting defensive rebounds or whatever. So, but when I look at the teams in the play-in bracket, the one team that I have the least amount of hope for, honestly, Phoenix. I'm going to be completely real with you. And it's because we talked about it a couple episodes ago. For some reason, Phoenix in the fourth quarter is not consistent. Kevin Durant in his last three fourth quarters has 4 points, and he's 2 for 7. Like, and this is a Kevin Durant that we talk about all the time. We just did a damn show on if he's overrated or not. But he's, but like, this is a Kevin Durant that we hold in high regard. But when I look at the Suns team, I told y'all before, bro, I'm just not high on them. Outside of Devin Booker and Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant, as a whole, the Big Three experiment has been severely underwhelming this year. And a part of that is because of Bradley Beal's injuries, but that was a part that we were factoring in when they made the trade. Like, the injury history is not just going to go away. Like, it's up to you to fix that. This man had a bad back for the first month of the season. Like, so
he did.
And Kevin Durant's only getting older. Devin Booker can only do so much. And Yusuf Nurkic is there. That's cool. But, like, outside of that, I just don't trust it. I can't see it, like, you know. And then I look at the Mavericks. They're a team that's also up and down. They have good weeks. They have bad weeks. There have been numerous instances literally in the last 2 months where Luka is giving you a 30-point damn near triple-double or triple-double and losing.
Yeah.
Kyrie's giving you 28 on top of that, too. It's a different story because with some teams, you look at it and you're like, all right, you know, one guy goes off. The second best guy doesn't go off. That's the reason they lost. There's been numerous instances where Luka's had 40 and Kyrie's had 30 and they've lost. Or Kyrie's had 28, you know, more than his season average, and they've lost. So it's like, and you would have thought that this team that right out of the trade deadline was rolling, had won seven straight, had the number one defense in the league during that stretch, and then the next eight or so games fall off a cliff and fall to the bottom of the league in defensive rating. There's still question marks there. I don't know if it's because of Jason Kidd or what, but I don't like, so for me, the Suns are at the top of my list in terms of worried, like not worried, about, but worried for the Mavericks. And then the Lakers and the Warriors are pretty much interchangeable. I think those two are the best teams in the play-in, despite what the seeding says. I don't care. I'll trust a Lakers team with a healthy LeBron and Anthony Davis and whatever D'Lo decides to show up with, and Austin Reeves and the whole crew, and a Warriors team with Steph Curry and Jonathan Kuminga, who has not showed signs of slowing down at all, right? Klay Thompson's heating up right at the right moment. The Warriors bench is something that I'm not worried about at all. I don't give a damn. The Warriors bench is a top three bench in the league. So when we're talking about, you know, postseason runs and you're needing to keep going with your unit and you can pull deeper and go into the 12
lineups,
that shit matters. Straight Bullets, what I do, bro? What I do? Why you hating, bro?
I don't know why they're on your ass today. Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Are him and Katz just sitting in a room playing with it? Like, what are y'all doing, bro?
Anyway. Nah, that's crazy. Yeah. But yeah. We said this, right? And I said this. I said the Phoenix Suns are like the worst fourth quarter team in basketball right now. And it feels like the boost that they get from having all their players healthy isn't what it should be. Because on paper, if you have Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Booker, your plus should be like a plus 15 or plus 12 when they're on the floor together. We're seeing games now where literally in one of the games versus Boston, they all had 20 plus and they lost by damn near 20 plus. And it's like, you can't have it to where your best players, who you sacrifice your roster, your cast space, all this for, come together and you're still able to lose where all of them have a relatively good game. Specifically when they're taking away Kevin Durant and they're saying, okay, Booker, do something with the ball. Bradley Beal, do something with the ball. And you don't have a consistent offense generator for you. Especially when your best lineups rely on having guys like Grayson Allen, who's a phenomenal three-point shooter. But at the end of the day, Grayson Allen, Nurkic, defensive pick and roll is ass because Nurkic is not a good defenser, right?
Yeah,
defenser. Like, I said defenser. I'm sick a little bit. But the rebounding for Nurkic is his main role. But in terms of, like, pick and roll defense – when good teams play him, they pick him apart. So now it's like we're relying on that. Bobo is the only other guy who gives this real, real length. And Kevin Durant is being asked to do so much on the defensive end with having to fit into the offense as well. And they're not able to consistently get the stops that they need. So that's why the Suns you kind of question, because while they can outscore everybody, there's many teams that can also walk them down based off their flaws. That's why they're such a big boom or bust team in the NBA. When you get to a team like Dallas, who I love the trades that they made. I love that they got PJ, Gafford, and Lyle. I feel like that's huge. At the end of the day, the wing position is mad questionable.
Yep.
THJ either has 40 or 4 points. There's no in between. And it's like you don't know the consistency that you get from them. And then at the same time, I love Kyrie. I do. Mm-hmm. But objectively, if you looked at what Kyrie has produced in the playoffs post-2017, he has not been as good as the idea of Kyrie Irving is. And you have Luka, who's a great player, All-NBA player, playoff riser, one of the best players I've ever seen. We know what he's going to do. But in terms of a series, they are a variance team. If Kyrie is going to go crazy off of a tilted defense and their spacers are going to knock down shots, you're going home. Or their defense continues to be dog shit in the pick and roll, and they go home. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen with either of those teams, but the offensive burst is there. You go to a team like the Lakers, Darvin Ham, who are you? That's what we like constantly ask ourselves with the decision making from Darvin Ham with these rotations. It just got announced yesterday that Vanderbilt and also who else? Wood are out for the season now. And it's like, wow, like those are pieces that are important to your roster construction. Cam Reddish has been gone for I don't know how long. D'Lo, best season of his career, in my opinion. He's been great. Can he do this in the playoffs? We don't know. We got to figure out these things. Also, Bron is playing lights out basketball, but for him to be tasked with doing everything offensively at times, it's a lot for this team to rely on. They are a variance team because their defense also isn't as good. Even when Anthony Davis is on the floor this year, which is shocking. And then it comes down to who? The Golden State Warriors, a team that is so confusing on a night-to-night basis, where they can out-execute you or get shit on by the Bulls, right? Where Jonathan Kuminga fouls DeMar DeRozan on the up fake. The consistency in the West is not there from 7 through 10. But the peaks of all those teams, you can see them beating some of the other teams in the conference. Right. That's where we are right now.
It's crazy, too, because, like, I just want to get back to the Kyrie thing.
Yeah.
Something that doesn't get talked about. And I just think back to how many players have had to deal with being scrutinized or being made out to be bad playoff players, but then they actually end up being good ones. Like Steph Curry, for example. I remember it was probably 2017, maybe, 2017 on. People were questioning Steph Curry's character in the postseason, questioning how great he was in the postseason. And I'm just like, y'all are narrowing it down to people saying, oh, he's 0-for-9 in clutch situations in the postseason. Nigga, he got 4 championships. The hell? Look like he lived good off of that. The hell are you talking about?
Oh, no, he got tight off that.
what are we doing? He's 0-for-9 in the clutch, but he has 4 championships. Same amount of rings as this precious king. What are we talking about? But back to the Kyrie thing. Sorry, that shit just pisses me off, bro. How many narratives that they try to throw shit at the wall hoping that it stick?
I hear you.
With Kyrie Irving. And then there's other players that go under the radar. I told y'all the other day, Damian Lillard. Why is the majority of time when people
great example
off Dame, they all you're talking about is 2 walk-off moments. Talk about the percentages. Talk about the time he got outplayed by Drew Holiday in 2018 when Drew Holiday was on the Pelicans in the first round, a series that the Trailblazers were supposed to win, and Dame put up 18 a game. Talk about that. You know what I'm saying? Dame has had moments for sure. Don't get me wrong. No disrespect. But this is a guy, like I told y'all, who people will say that James Harden is a worse playoff performer than Dame, though he shoots better than him. He may have worse moments, but he's getting farther in a series than Damian Lillard is. He's getting farther in the postseason than Damian Lillard is. Now, you can say that you can count that to roster construction or whatever, but the fact of the matter is that the reason that James Harden gets looked at as a playoff choker is for what he does in usually games is 5, 6, and 7, right? But Damian Lillard can go completely unscathed. Right, Russell Westbrook will be slandered more than Damian Lillard in the playoffs. He can't make it out the first round without Kevin Durant. Yada, yada, yada. And it's like, yo, there are certain players that should not be held in such a high regard when we talk about postseason performers. For Kyrie Irving, you can say that some years he was hurt for sure, but I remember 2019, he played like shit in the first round. I remember 2022, the Celtics locked him and Kevin Durant up like clockwork. It was insane. And like, there's just... That's just crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. I vividly remember the Kyrie stuff because I went back and I watched the games and I had the log and I just remember what he's done. His best series post 2017 is versus the Boston Celtics, the one year where they had Harden, Kyrie, and KD at full health. After that, it becomes very hard. His worst series is the last year in Brooklyn when he was playing with Kevin Durant versus a different Celtics team where he was literally producing like bad, like very, 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 very bad, right? Like that's what I remember. But the thing with Kyrie is because of what he did in 2016 or 17, he has the ability to rise to these moments.
Right.
Will he do it on this Dallas team that desperately needs that variance with Luka? we got to see exactly how that goes. But I mean, you know, there's just so much that goes into these overall matchups, especially in single game. Like my favorite that I would love to see, ZZ, I need to see Kings versus Lakers playing. I got to see it. Oh, I got to see, bro, chat, single game elimination, Kings versus Lakers, who you got? Who you got? Single game. I get that they have LeBron, but the pacing of the Kings, the three-point shooters that the Kings have, and how there's literally no answer for De'Aaron Fox on that Lakers roster consistently. I think that's a great matchup. And obviously you have the Sabonis AD talk.
I was about to say you left out the most important part. Yeah, the Lakers got LeBron, but unfortunately the Kings got Sabonis and the Lakers got Anthony Davis. And AD ain't never beat that man. So what are we doing? But a play-in game, a one
that would be crazy.
Like, single elimination, Anthony Davis, like imagine the amount of pressure that man would have when they start throwing out the graphics of 0-12 and Sabonis whooping his ass last time. Like,
yeah, that's nasty. Yeah.
They're going to be on his neck, bro. Oh, my God.
Yeah. and to your credit, Damian Lillard, this is another player that I feel like for years has been a great player. But in terms of playoff success, he hasn't had a roster fair to maximize him to get to that level. But when he's played against elite to close to elite competition, he also has not performed at such an elite level as well. He has two playoffs. Amazing. That's really great that he has two series where he was super dominant in. But even if you dive into those series and those runs, he still hasn't shown you consistently where he can be regular season Dame all the way through and through. And that's fine. There's not that many players that can rise their level of play in the postseason compared to regular season. But for the Bucks, we're looking at a team that I say coming in, the defenders are not there. They're relying on Dame offensively, as they should be. But Giannis isn't the best screen setter. Giannis is better utilized sometimes with the ball in his hands. He doesn't really want to screen as much as Brook Lopez will. And this season, they're 0-5 without Dame. But with Dame and no Giannis, they've been dominant. So it's like figuring out that blend of styles for the Bucks is the question, and how Dame can rise to that occasion when needed in the postseason. We still have a lot of questions these teams have to answer down the stretch, which is why watching them as you get closer and closer to the end of the season is going to be very, very key to understanding what we see. And Brandon, real quick, I see you in the chat, Brandon. If your response is Kings can't play defense, you haven't watched any basketball for the Kings or the Lakers. Because if you notice in those matchups, the Kings outscore them because the Lakers also can't play defense. It happens. I get how good of a player Anthony Davis is, but these handoffs and just how they have D'Lo and Austin Reeves on the floor, the Lakers also have weak links defensively. So it's like, that's the intrigue of watching Kings versus Lakers, at least to me, ZZ.
Yeah, no, Brandon, shut the hell up. Stop talking. We've been how many times this episode have you dropped a take and then it's been easily debunked by either the two of us or whoever comments below you? I didn't see you getting cooked by at least two of the damn people in the chat throughout this episode. Damn, I think .com was cooking your shit earlier. Stop talking. Damn.
Shout out to .com, man. Shout out to .com.
Yeah, shout out Brandon too. You know, we love you, but damn, you need help. All right. So we about to roll out of here, right?
Yeah. So people, appreciate you guys for tapping into From the Logo. Again, we do this show on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. This was the load management episode. Hayes has some family stuff he had to go deal with. Shout out to him. Jalen is a covert agent right now, and Dub is Dub. But we're going to be winding up as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. So again, make sure to tap in those likes and all that, really help us hit that algorithm and grow. So if you're still watching, make sure to hit the like for this video. Also, leave a comment on some topics you would like to see us talk about and address in future episodes. We'll get to those. We do have a lot of plans lined up in the future with all NBA, all defensive teams, and fantasy drafts. A lot of that content is coming. But if you got some more ideas, again, leave those in the description. It's been your host with the most. My name is Gifted. You can follow me at Gifted Hoops on pretty much all of my social medias, Gifted Hoops _ on Twitter. My links are in the description. ZZ, feel free to promote yourself to the people as well.
Yeah, I already know y'all know me. I don't know if y'all know my son. His name is Brandon. But
oh my god.
I'm actually ZZ Huncho, you know, the GOAT, the phenomenon, player's choices, you know, golden boy. But you can find me on ZZ Huncho on TikTok. You can find me ZZ_Huncho on Instagram, and you can find all of our shit in the description below. W show, W fill in host. I was running late from work. I had to text my boy Gifted to hop on and do
it. Gotcha.
And you know what I'm saying? We had a hell of a show talking about load management. So
yeah,
see y'all on Thursday.
Yes, we will catch you guys in the next episode of Frontal Logo. Again, like the videos, helps us get out there more. And peace out, people. Y'all have a good one. I'm gonna wave while the stream ends for 3 seconds. Peace out, people. Brand have a good one. Go tap into the LeBron James Ready podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.